This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After 5 years of explosive growth, the housing market is finally cooling off. New national data show that the stock of unsold houses is up, prices are stable or dropping in most places, and sales this quarter are down from a year ago. And gone, at least for now, are the frenzied bidding wars and waived inspections of just a year ago, and the widespread assumption that your house would appreciate by 10% or more every year. But it's not the same everywhere. While sales plummeted in formerly red-hot markets like Florida, California, and Virginia, sales are up in 20 states, including Texas, North Carolina, and Vermont. Still, the trend is definitely down nationwide. We'll talk about the effect on the economy as a whole and what it means for suddenly lonely sellers, for buyers, and for renters, for people who took advantage of low interest rates to buy a first home, and for those who bought second or third homes in hope of quick resales and good profits. How's the housing market where you live? If you have questions about buying or selling in a buyer's market, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email or send us your most outrageous story from those golden days of the housing boom. How many offers did you get on the first day? The address is talk@npr.org. Later on in the program, graphic nonfiction, the report of the 9/11 Commission, comes out as a comic book. But first, the end of the boom. Lawrence Yun is a senior economist with the National Association of Realtors, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in for the program today.
Good afternoon.
Besides all of the for sale signs we can all see out there, what indicators tell you that the boom is finally over?
Well, the home sales activity peaked last August, and since that time, the sales have steadily trended downwards. But it's not only the sales, but things like housing starts, mortgage purchase applications, the days on the market has been lengthening. So there are many indicators basically saying that the boom is over and now we are in a cooling trend.
And I guess the next question is, a lot of people thought, well, this was a big bubble, and when it bursts, it's going to burst fast. Are we in for what they're calling a hard landing or a softer landing?
Well, all real estate is local. So some markets are seeing a rather sharp transition. For example, in Florida markets, where, again, it was very frenzy level of activity just last year. This year, the inventory is up double, triple the level of last year. Buyers have suddenly disappeared. So there is a price pressure on the prices to actually come down. But in other parts of the country, for example, say Austin, Texas, or in Seattle, Washington, there is actually lack of inventory. Home prices are actually accelerating. So real estate is local, but overall, for the country as a whole, we are seeing maybe 70% of the country on a decline, 30% on the rise.
Is it fair assumption to say that the hotter your local market was maybe 2-3 years, even 1 year ago, the more likely it is to be plummeting now?
The overheated markets are the ones that are seeing the sudden transitions.
Mm-hmm. Now, are all kinds of homes affected? Again, this is all local, isn't it?
It's local. One area that is taking a more plunge than other market is in the condo market. A lot of investor demand of last year, now the investors are suddenly leaving, and typically investors are more interested in low maintenance properties, so they typically buy condo properties. Now the investors seeing a less opportunity for price appreciation are leaving very fast, which I think is very healthy. I mean, we are cleansing out this long-term buyers. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good for the market over the long term. But over the short term, there is a little pain as they are suddenly leaving.
And if people are wanting to actually sell their condominium for a real reason, they could be in problem. They could have a problem.
That's right. So people who are not in the need to sell, if they sort of wait it out, I think the market will turn for the better. But in the short term, at least over the next year, I think the market will be difficult.
Now, in terms of people who are selling for one reason or another, again, you were talking about there were record heights last year. People who are selling this year, for the most part, are they getting less than they'd hoped, or are they taking a loss?
For most people, I mean, they're still gaining gains. I mean, so compared to last year, you know, they are still getting 4 or 5% higher price now compared to this time last year. But again, locally speaking, for example, in the D.C. market or Florida markets or some of the California markets, now they are actually getting lower price now than what it was last year.
But that if you've held on to your house for 10 years or 5 years, you're still going to have seen a lot of appreciation there.
A person who bought a home 5 years ago, a typical U.S. home buyer who bought a home 5 years ago would have accumulated $60,000 in housing equity gain. Mm-hmm. So over the long term, there is a gain. Even if there was to be a short-term fall, a person who bought 5-6 years ago, they would still have a substantial equity gains.
Now, what does this do to the national economy? I mean, the housing has been an enormous part, not only the construction of new houses, but also all the financing that goes on and the refinancing as people saw very attractive interest rates.
Housing directly contributes about 15% of the national economic activity, 15% of GDP. Directly. Indirectly, basically through the housing equity accumulation, taking out cash refis and go out and buying automobiles, mm-hmm. television and such. That has been a very big boost in holding up consumer spending. I mean, many economists have been puzzled as to why consumer spending have held on so well over the past, the recession cycle, sluggish job growth, and then reason is due to the strong housing market. And now the housing market is cooling. I mean, that is certainly raising concern. And this is something I think particularly the Federal Reserve needs to carefully monitor, because should the housing market, home prices suddenly flatten out or even turn negative, that would imply consumer spending pullback, and that may actually tip the economy into a recession.
Mm-hmm. And so at that point, interest rates are always of enormous, excuse the expression, interest, but interest rates in this particular regard, they've been trending up the last year or so, and now that's going to have to be carefully looked at.
Certainly. There was a pause in last Federal Reserve meeting, and my guess is that Federal Reserve need to monitor the housing market very carefully. There are some signs where some markets are very fragile, and any repercussion in the consumer spending area could have really a severe negative economic consequences.
Well, let's get some listeners' questions on the air as well. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Don't forget to send us your most outrageous story of the seller's market. Here joining us now on the line from Jewett City in Connecticut is Priscilla.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My husband is in the building trades, and right now what seems to be happening in Connecticut is they're really focusing on affordable housing, because people tend to be leaving Connecticut because of the lack of affordable housing. I'm wondering if that trend is going to continue, or if they see that as something that is going to be bottoming out also, because right now we've got a lot of people coming into Connecticut, but there's not a lot of affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking at the statistics I have available. Sales of homes in Connecticut was down 3.5% over the past year. So, Mr. Yun?
Certainly. The affordability issue has become a major problem in the past 5 years due to the significant run-up in home prices. So if you are a homeowner, you gain the housing equity. But if the person was a renter and trying to enter the market, now, it's very difficult with higher home prices and higher mortgage rates. So many people have been moving into the rental market, and the rents have been strengthening. For some home
by
builders,
strengthening, rents are getting higher, is what you're saying.
Rents are getting higher. And some builders are recognizing that there is a strong housing demand on the lower end side, and expanding into the affordable housing. And I think that's a great trend. Certainly, in a high price market, we are hearing stories of public service workers, policemen, firemen who have to live further out, that cannot afford to live in their locality. So any development in the affordable housing area is, I think, the right trend.
Mm-hmm. And is that the kind of housing your husband builds, Priscilla?
Yes, and I'm wondering what would be considered the median for Connecticut. Is there a median that you can give me an idea about what would be the cost of a medium price of a house? I know right now my house was $100,000 10 years ago, and it's up to
$315,000. Hmm.
Each local market, because of the variation in the land prices, I mean, the structure could be the same, but due to the variation in the land prices, different area would consider something affordable, while the same home would be considered expensive in other part. Connecticut is more pricey market. I think any development of homes under $200,000 would be, I think, very good for many current renters who are looking into entering the home ownership market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good luck, Priscilla.
Thank you very, very much.
Sure.
Yep.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Bill. Bill's calling us from Grand Junction in Colorado.
Hi there. I was debating between renting and buying, and I live in Colorado, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on the real estate market in general in Colorado.
I'm just looking at this list, and sales were down 2.3% last year. But go ahead, Mr. Yun.
Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, the Rocky Mountain region, I'm actually optimistic about that region. What we are seeing is that many people who have lived in California suddenly realize it's very difficult to live there, or people who have been owners in California are saying, hey, why not move to, say, Colorado, cash out, use the equity to buy a much larger house at a smaller price, and use the remaining cash for just enjoyable lifestyle. So we are seeing a migration trend of people moving from California into Utah, Colorado, and I am more optimistic in, say, Rocky Mountain State compared to the more coastal markets.
Thank you so very much.
Good luck, Bill. And very broadly speaking, as economists like yourself look at the demographics of this country, the number of immigrants that are coming in, the number of households that are expected to be created over the next 10 or 20 years, the market for housing looks pretty sunny.
The immigrant demand has been very strong. Typically it takes several years for immigrants to sort of save for down payment. And the fact that we had such a surge in immigrant population in the 1990s and in the early part of this decade, that will pay a strong dividend for the housing market going forward. And also, U.S. is in that unique position where the population growth is very respectable, unlike European country where their population is stagnating or declining. So anytime population is growing, that just means that people need some place to live. So we need to build more homes.
Lawrence Yun, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. Lawrence Yun is senior economist with the National Association of Realtors. He was with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, more of your calls. How's the housing market going where you live? I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The housing boom is over. At least that's what the numbers tell us. Sales are down in more cities than they're up. Prices have leveled off in many other areas. We're talking about what the latest figures mean if you're looking to buy or sell or just testing the market. And in a few minutes, how a housing slowdown might affect the rest of the economy. Joining us now is Elizabeth Razzie. She's the author of The Fearless Home Buyer, Razzie's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal, and the author of the forthcoming book, The Fearless Home Seller. She's with us here in Studio 3A. Sounds like you've anticipated this change.
Well, there's very often we're doing both buying and selling the same transaction, so it's the whole deal.
Mm-hmm. Has the market changed in your experience? Is it now a seller's market?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it was changing even as I was writing the books. The markets of the last couple of years, the extreme seller's markets were really just incredible, and it's not supposed to work like that. You're really not supposed to be able to sell a house in 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of got used to it, and there's some people who really have known nothing else. But it should take several weeks to several months to sell a home. You should be able to negotiate. You should be able to have a little selection.
Really? This is a brand new world for a lot of people,
exactly.
As you suggest.
Exactly. Back to normal.
Back to normal. Well, it's going to be a little disappointing for people who wonder why they're getting no action on a house that's priced just the same as their neighbor got last year.
Well, I think that's the key. It's priced just the same as their neighbor got last year because the market has changed, and now they have to compete with other sellers. That didn't used to be the case. You didn't really have any competition.
Is there sort of a point of disbelief where sellers say, oh, wait a minute, this can't possibly be. I'm just going to hold the price here for a while and see what happens?
Well, yeah, and we have to also realize that we tend to view our own home the way we view our own children, which is a little bit above normal, above average. Our house is a place where we've lived and we've invested mm-hmm. our own tastes in the place. And so the idea that people wouldn't want to just go and snap it up immediately at this reasonable price is just a little bit offensive.
There's also the idea that, frenzy or not, the way most people buy houses is not to see an instant profit in 6 months or even 2 years' time, but they buy to live in for 5 or 10 years.
Housing is the ultimate long-term investment. Real estate in general is a long-term investment, and a lot of people forgot that. The whole idea of flipping real estate is just crazy. And I know a lot of people are being burned because they did invest in options to buy condos and things like that and turn quite nice profits within a year, and that's not typical. You know, typically you should be in a home 3 years at least to have enough appreciation to cover the cost of hiring a broker to sell it, for mm-hmm. one thing, and then to pocket a little bit of money.
And don't forget those moving costs. They're going to add up, too.
Absolutely.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. This is Sandy. Sandy is calling us from St. Louis.
Hi.
Hi.
I put my house on Craigslist, St. Louis, on August the 5th, and I'm signing the contract on it tonight.
Good for you.
Congratulations, Sandy.
I am so happy. I'm levitating.
And did you get the price that you had hoped to get?
I got about $7,000 more.
Wow.
I took bids on the house on Sunday the 20th, and there were 3 valid bids, and this bid was considerably above the next highest bid.
So at least in St. Louis, Missouri, Elizabeth Razzie, it looks like the old rules are still in effect.
I can't guarantee that because there's an awful lot of houses for sale.
Aha.
And they're sitting there.
Why did yours move, do you think?
Oh, I think I wrote about my house, and I live in a 4-family building that was built by an architect in the 20s, and I guess I romanced it. I put a headline on it that said, small castle with income.
So it's
a wonderful young prince has bought it.
And salesmanship always matters, Elizabeth.
Well, sell the sizzle, I guess, but it's still a wonderful house. It's well worth it.
Well, it always helps to have a desirable property and to have something that can be set apart from the big flock of homes that are competing with yours on the market. Yours had 2 things going for it. It had the architectural distinction and the income property. And they're 2 great things that you were able to promote in your advertising, and that's a smart thing to do.
Thank you. I'm so happy these people are going to have it.
And have you found a new place to live, Sandy?
Yes, I have. I'm moving into an area where a lot of people are restoring houses. It's called Benton Park. It's mm-hmm. right near the Anheuser-Busch Brewery, not a commercial. And a lot of good people are moving there, and I'm going to, too.
Sandy, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Joseph. Joseph calling us from New Orleans.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm just calling to try to maybe you can give me some guidance. I don't know about what's going to happen with the market. We all kind of need to know if we should stay with our houses or sell our houses. My house was about 50% destroyed, completely gutted, and it's a shell of a house now. And I'm living in a FEMA trailer in the front yard, and I'm trying to decide, should I sell or should I hold on to it until like next season or.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very confusing time for a lot of us down here.
Elizabeth, any advice?
Well, unfortunately, you're in such an unusual situation. So much of your decision-making depends on what other people are going to do, whether they're going to rebuild the flood walls and the levees to the levels that will protect your home or not, what's going to happen to the whole area around you. You really need to look at the overall city planning and what FEMA and the Corps of Engineers and everybody's going to do to decide if that old property of yours is going to be as valuable to you as it was before the storm.
Right.
That's not an easy decision.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors involved. Fortunately, I live in a neighborhood that is pretty much coming back. It wasn't completely destroyed. The first 2 blocks of our neighborhood were destroyed, and then the other ones they were fine. So I think in the future we have a good place to be.
Well, it sounds as if you have a strong, at least a rationale for your emotional attachment.
Well, yeah, that's true too. You know, it's like where you have to want to be there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
So long. Buying or selling a house can often be an emotional transaction as well as a financial one. Those emotions can wield considerable power. Robert Schiller is an economics professor at Yale University and the author of Irrational Exuberance, Second Edition. He joins us now from a Yale University studio in New Haven, Connecticut. Nice to have you back on the program.
Hi.
Do you feel justified in your predictions of some years ago? Irrational exuberance finally over, do you think?
Well, in the stock market, But we're talking about the housing market.
Yes, indeed, but you were writing about that as well.
That's what I added in the second edition, because I thought that we were going through a boom in the housing market that looked an awful lot like the boom that we saw in the 90s in the stock market, driven by human psychology. And your two speakers so far really haven't mentioned that. I'm concerned about this market because I think it's supported by feelings that the market will continue to go up. And once that stops happening, there's going to be people who want to sell.
Thus far, and a lot of people have talked about this, thus far people are predicting, by and large, a soft landing. Yes, prices are stable or going down in some places, but they're not expecting a real drop in prices.
Well, it's possible they're right. I suppose we can hope that they're right. But we've seen big drops. This is the biggest real estate boom in U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how anyone can be confident. The futures market for single-family homes, which just opened in Chicago, is now predicting declines of between 4 and 5% for 10 major U.S. cities by May of this year. Now, I don't know, you know, maybe not quite so soon, but there's a lot of people worrying about declines, and those worries could have the effect of getting people to sell and producing those declines.
Mm-hmm. And the psychological effect, I guess it's the same as the boom, except in reverse.
We can go down on a negative path. As prices start falling, more and more people hear about that, and they think, why am I holding two homes? You know, or why am I holding a home at all? I could live in an apartment. And it doesn't take a whole lot of those people to throw the market out of balance and start producing more declines.
So what statistics, what numbers do you look at as indicators?
Well, first of all, it's the futures market, because that is a market that is a forecasting market, and we've learned that such markets have predicting power. Beyond that, there's a lot of, you know, we've seen a lot of signs that the peak may be at hand, and Lawrence Yun mentioned some of those,
mm-hmm.
Without the same interpretation that I would give. I mean, he was generally not painting this as a dramatic scenario, but we've seen a sharp drop in housing starts and in permits in the last few months. And these are leading indicators. Housing permits is one of the 10 leading indicators in the index of leading indicators, because it has in the past had consequences. When people stop buying or building houses, that's something to start worrying about. But I don't know for sure, I would say. It could just resume going up. But at this point, it looks like this could be a major turning point.
In the articles that I've read, people say, you know, a precipitous collapse of housing prices is often connected to losses in the job market. At the same time, housing is going down. That does not seem to be happening.
Well, but I don't think that this drop in home prices is likely right away. I mean, I'm thinking that a plausible scenario would be a recession in 2008 accompanied by serious drops in home prices. That's a plausible scenario, which has maybe a probability of less than a half, but it's the kind of thing that's happened many times in history. And why do we have recessions? Well, these are difficult things to disentangle, but the real estate market is part of the process that brings on a recession. So it's not as if it has to be coming from somewhere else. It comes from the real estate market.
Hmm. Elizabeth Razzi, what do your people tell you when you talk to them?
Well, the thing is, I think we need to constantly keep in mind that the housing market does operate differently than the stock market, the bond market, and commodities markets, in that people are not going to decide, oh, housing prices are about to go down, I'd better sell my house and my homestead and go move into an apartment somewhere just because of finances. I don't think that kind of apocalypse is coming, and also people have lifestyle needs and decisions. You know, if a young couple has a baby on the way and plans for a larger family, they're not thinking of a two-bedroom apartment. They're thinking about a home, a house somewhere. And if they're planning to be there 5 years, 10 years, which is not unreasonable, that's a fairly safe decision to make, even regardless of what's happening with futures, commodities, and interest rates. That's a lifestyle decision, and it's usually a pretty sound one.
And Robert Schiller, it's a fairly large segment of the housing market.
Well, you know, we've seen drops in prices before, and so something happened in the early 90s that brought Los Angeles lost 40% of its real value between 1990 and 1997.
Right, but then it went on to gain that value back plus more for people who held on longer.
Time. Yeah, but you know that doesn't mean it's going to happen next time. We saw some major, there was a huge real estate boom in California in the 1880s, and then it dropped. It didn't come back until the 1970s. There was a huge increase. So,
well, there were giant earthquakes that had something to do with that as well. But individuals still had to make a decision on where to buy. Mm.
We're discussing the drop and stabilization of housing prices in many parts of the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Bill. Bill's with us from San Jose.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'd like to hear your guests talk more about the economics that were underpinning this huge run-up in prices and that I think now are reversing and could cause the same thing to deflate this bubble. So what I'm thinking of, the main underpinning economic factors here were the historic change in interest rates that the Federal Reserve made, lowering interest rates to historic lows in a very fast pace, and that created a huge lever on housing prices, allowing people to borrow more money for the same salary. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and I live in Silicon Valley, what's been driving prices here are these really exotic loan types, option arms, interest-only loans, that, again, have been a huge lever. And I know that the interest rates have gone up. Maybe they'll go up more, maybe they won't, but they've already gone up a lot vis-a-vis where they were before. And now I'm hearing that the regulating authorities are going to be cramping down on these exotic loans because people are really misusing them. I'd like to hear the guests talk more about this and what that could do. In my mind, it seems like prices could go back to where they were 3 or 4 years ago, mm-hmm. which wouldn't be a 10 or 20% decline. It would be a 70 or 80% decline in prices, and that's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Robert Schiller, what do you think?
Well, Bill is absolutely right to bring up this issue, and it's something I've been bringing up. I've been trying to talk to the regulators. They haven't been moving fast on there's nothing wrong with arms or option arms for the right people, but the problem is that some people have been using them in a wishful thinking to buy a house that's bigger than they can afford. And when it's the short rates that went down to 1% when the Fed was really cutting rates that made the arm seem like such a way to buy a really big house for mm-hmm. some people.
Especially less educated
people who bought them. It's a real problem.
I should just say an arm is an adjustable rate mortgage. Elizabeth Razzie, that's just one of the exotic financing options that were made available.
An adjustable rate mortgage in itself is not all that exotic. They've been around quite a long time. And a one-year adjustable or a hybrid loan that's fixed for 5, 7, 10 years and then switches to a one-year adjustable is a fairly reasonable thing to do. Unfortunately, over the last couple of years, a lot of mortgage lenders and mortgage brokers were pushing these payment option mortgages where you could not pay enough to pay off the loan every month, or you could skip payments, or you could make only interest payments. And it was very much like buying your house on a credit card, and you would get into the same kind of debt trouble as buying a house on a credit card. I think they were absolutely irresponsible in making those loans. And I know some very well-educated, savvy people who did not understand the degree to which their payments could go up.
Mm-hmm. Robert Schiller, do you think that all of this could snowball into the kind of price declines that Bill was talking about?
I think it's an important factor, although the most important factor is just the psychology. We don't, even if there were no option arms, we could still have a bust just as we'd have in the past. It just depends on psychology.
Mm-hmm. Don't busts, though, looking back at psychology, doesn't something sort of trigger them and they happen very suddenly?
Not in real estate. Well, even in the stock market, nobody really – the triggers are so hard to see. What caused the crash of 29? People still don't know. What happened in October of 1987? It seems to be – I think psychology is the unseen factor. And fortunate for economics, it's not easy to describe. But you sense that the psychology is changing now. I'm not sure about it, but – I mean, it confirms why I see markets predicting price declines coming up.
Mm-hmm. And prices could be more or less stable, you're suggesting, even if as the psychology does change for 2 or 3 years.
I'm not at all sure what prices will do. Interesting case is Australia. because it seemed to be leading. I thought Australia would be a case study for our own housing bust. But now, according to the latest news from Australia, it looks like their market is firming again. So, you know, you just can't predict.
Bill, thanks very much for the call. And we'll be back after a short break. If you'd like to join our conversation on the meaning for the economy and for buyers and sellers of the stabilization or drop in many places of housing prices, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Plus 9/11 depicted in the pages of a new comic book. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about the end of the housing boom. Our guests are Elizabeth Razzie, the author of The Fearless Home Buyer, Razzie's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal, and Robert Schiller, a professor of economics at Yale and author of the book Irrational Exuberance. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Sam. Sam's calling us from the Bay Area in California. Sam, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm a real estate broker in the Bay Area, and I want to say to Dr. Schiller, I wish I'd listened to you in 1999. I remember the same conversation vis-a-vis the stock market, and I was over-involved in three jobs and didn't pull out of the markets. You were dead on. I'd refer to the book Devil Take the Hindmost, which tracks these kinds of trends. You probably are familiar with it. And there's something to be learned there. I think we are at the peak of the markets here in the Bay Area. We've seen 4 or 5% drops in prices on very good homes that are very good homes, are in great shape. Can't be anything other than the topping of the bubble. Hmm. That's all I really have to say on this. And again, Dr. Schiller, I appreciate your help.
And Sam, does Dr. Schiller's description, his not his alone, but other people have called it too, a bubble. In other words, something that's unsupportable once the psychology changes. You would describe the real estate market in San Francisco that way?
I think that's reasonable. But you know, one other thing I want to address also is the fact that the lending side has really gotten out of control. Same thing happened in the 80s. People were making crazy loans. Lenders will make loans if they can make the points, and that's what they're doing. I would say that the Fed has been irresponsible in keeping interest rates down for way too long, even though that's benefited me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great reason for the sprint in housing prices. And if you look at the past, that's what happened with the stock markets and other bubbles that have occurred in the last 200 years. It's classic. So, you know, just a simple observation.
Well, Robert Schiller, nice to hear some kind words.
Yeah, the Bay Area is one of the most glamorous areas in this country. And glamour areas are vulnerable to booms or bubbles. They're close to Silicon Valley, which has achieved huge home prices. Now, Lawrence Yun was just saying that a lot of people are moving to the Colorado or neighboring states because it's so expensive out there in California. And so I think that's part of the process. Even though these places are so highly priced, we shouldn't trust those prices for the long run because people can move away and new construction can come in to find alternative places for people to live, and that will bring prices down.
Hmm. Elizabeth Razzie?
Well, that's why you can have a little more comfort in buying a home in a place that hasn't had that kind of huge run-up. I mean, the Bay Area is about it's the poster child for the real estate bubble. It just got so expensive that it wasn't worth what it takes to live there.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a good job somewhere else in the country, and that's sort of a self-limiting thing. But there are lots of places in the country where you can move and find affordable housing and where you can take the risk and make a bet on investing your money in a home for several years. You know, it's riskier. The metro areas where, you know, people have been speculating on houses and condos especially, the resort areas, they're the riskier ones where people were taking out those really risky mortgage loans to just stretch beyond their capability to get into homes. That's where the problem is.
Mm. Sam, thanks for the call. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we get one last call in. Christina. Christina's with us from Sacramento.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much today. I'd like to say, first of all, that all the points that have been covered so far are valid from my experiences. I'm a realtor in Sacramento. And I would like to talk about the psychology of fear and what's going on in relation to my unique experiences with the Spanish-speaking immigrant community.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's really important to remember when I'm speaking here that there's a huge percentage of Spanish-speaking immigrants that are a part of the U.S. consumer economy. And previously, they were able, because it is not the law, it's a lender preference is what the qualifications are, it was easier for them to qualify for a loan, showing their documentation, whatever they had. But in California, what happened was when the driver's license bill was repealed and did not allow the undocumented immigrants to reapply for their driver's licenses or identification cards, what happens is literally hundreds, if not thousands, daily in California have their current driver's licenses expired. Okay? So the implications, the economic implications of that, not to mention the personal ones, are huge when it comes to people that have been employed as jobs as drivers, and their employers are also scared because they might have to document them or they can't get insurance for their drivers because they don't have a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is the instability and the fear of this has stopped the not only the Spanish-speaking community from wanting to apply for a loan because they're afraid of what happens to their job status, but also the lenders have gotten a lot more careful about that. And at the time of closing, when you're signing your escrow documents, you have to have a current valid form of identification. It doesn't matter what country you're from. It has to be valid.
And
a lot of these people have been here for like 10, 15, 20 years. They have their identification. They're not current in their former country because they've been here and been able to use this identification.
Yeah, I think we get
now it's not valid.
I think we get the point, Christina. And Robert Schiller, I'd like you to ask you to respond to that. Obviously, these kinds of restrictions seem to be on the increase across the country.
Yeah, see, the kind of thing she brings up, what lenders might do. If the market starts to turn, lenders might be less willing to even approve a loan with a high loan-to-value ratio. And so they'll expect, lenders have been eroding their standards. It used to be that they wouldn't loan you for more than a house more than 3 years' income. But now, typically, they go up to 4, 5, or even 8 years' income. And they're not going to want to do this, not even regulators. If they see the market turning, they're going to get worried too.
Yeah. What about those overall, though, sunnier demographic statistics that Lawrence also talked about, the number of household formations and indeed the number of immigrants who will be here with documents and able to buy first houses?
In Irrational Exuberance, my book, I looked at demographic factors, at construction cost factors, interest rates. I don't see that these things are really the dominant movers of the housing market historically. They sound plausible, and they must play some role. If you look particularly at population growth, it has had none of the magnitude of the swings we've seen in house prices. It's partly because the what logically should be pushing home prices is construction costs, because the home industry can build new houses when demand goes up. And construction costs haven't been going up. Prices going up relative to construction costs, which seems unstable right now.
Hmm. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Christina, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you in Sacramento.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Robert Schiller, who's the author most recently of Irrational Exuberance, second edition. And he joined us from Yale University studio in New Haven. Thanks again.
Okay, my pleasure.
And our thanks to also Elizabeth Razzie, author of The Fearless Home Buyer, Razzie's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal, and the forthcoming book, The Fearless Home Seller. Looks like they're going to have fear, a lot of lack of fear to do that.
Absolutely.
Elizabeth was here with us in Studio 3A. When we come back, the 9/11 report, the graphic nonfiction.